Kick its ass.
Poppers, hothead, no discernible difference in the arse.
I wonder though, does it require like, does the like do you have to try and put something up there,
or do you have to be trying to take a big shit?
Yeah,
that's right, a two-way street, Manus.
That we're not really testing the effects.
Yeah, we're just like
it doesn't just happen to your normal position. It has to be. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, would you really know if you'd had it, if your anus was particularly relaxed? Would you really know until you tried to do anything with it? Or, you know?
True.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's why anytime I do poppers, I immediately try and bum frig myself on the dance floor, just to check.
It's great if you're. It's so handy if you're already on the dance floor.
Yeah. Occasionally, I have to run to the dance floor, which is you lose the whole hot head.
You don't want to do a lot of running if you might have a loose anus. It's just, you know, I might fall up or out of there.
We've all been on those really uncomfortable runs where you're like, oh, I think I need a poo. Oh, I can probably hold it. It's only 10K. And 2 kilometers in, you're like, oh no, I'm faster. I'll stop thinking about how much I need to shit.
How come it's always exactly too far away from home base to be did you notice it? It's like, oh, 4.5 kilometers. What a convenient time for this to occur. It's never like the last 100 meters of your run.
Yeah. But God, if peeing, it was the last 100 meters, that'd be great.
But for
fucking
peeing,
class.
It's every time I go to the door of my house, my bladder is like, you know what fucking time it is.
We go the last 100 yards of a 10K directly into a toilet stall without.
Yeah. And then to run and jump, trousers coming off in midair.
You'd probably be as well to just kill yourself afterwards because it ain't getting any better.
It's not getting better.
Congratulations, you've peaked.
You've peaked. Kill yourself. Okay. People think they should do that at their lowest depth, and they're wrong.
Get out on a high.
Go ahead on a high. Fucking, oh, I feel shit. I better kill. That'll feel worse. It'll feel worse and then nothing. Why not have it feel better and then nothing? Shoot yourself when you're happy. If we could.
Because there could be more good.
If you could learn one thing from this.
It's additive.
Yeah. And plus, like, St. Peter is way more chill with you get. It's like trying to get past the bouncer at an exclusive nightclub. If you're in a good frame of mind, it's more likely to happen. You get up to heaven, it's like he's way less likely to notice that you killed yourself. And he'd be like, all right, okay, ladies.
He's more likely to send you for a coffee.
Yeah, I mean, and if you have your coffee before your run, you may be more likely to achieve your goal here. It's the final countdown. I'm Manus Cronin. Joining us this week, as always, Gavin Carberry and Jack Toner.
Hello. A
lot of big brew news this week, and boy, are we not going to talk about it.
Thank God.
I mean, I need to hear about the big brew news.
All right, stay on after the episode, Gavin. Manus will bring you up to speed.
I've made it pretty clear we won't be talking about it. So. Biggest brew news I saw is potentially old news, but it could be new news. I don't know. By definition, I suppose if it's news, it must be new. That is where the word comes from, as far as I know.
It's 3/4 of the word.
Yeah, it is. White Hag have released Little Fawn in a 440ml can.
Oh, the can it was born to play.
It's true. So if the deposit return scheme is the reason for this, and I can't fathom why it would be, but I decided that it must be, then it's worth it. Even if that's the only thing it achieves. Even if there's less recycling.
More 440. More 440.
I mean,
yeah, that's great.
I generally am of the opinion that most beers would benefit from being packaged in smaller packaging because they don't lend themselves to being very nice. Towards the end of the can, but a prop that like the most sessionable IPA on the market should be in a more sessionable can size.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I can't wait to pick up a couple of 440s of White Tag and just sink them over the summer.
Yeah, it's first thing in the morning so that everything's better for the day, I'd say, probably is the idea. Get right into the car, drive the kids to school, cause a pileup on the M50. I suggest it. I recommend it. It's legally mandated. The new beer of drink driving. White Hag, little fun.
Gavin, you're in marketing. Often it's about differentiation. Would the one beer who positions itself as the one to have before you drive somewhere?
Now, a lot of marketing is focused on differentiation instead of distinctiveness, all right? Yeah. But by offering yourself as the beer of drink driving, you kind of get the best of both, you know?
Yeah. Don't drink and drive, but also do that with this one.
Don't drink and drive, but if you're going to have a drink and drive, have a drink and drive is very different to drunk driving.
Yeah.
Have a drink and drive.
Yeah.
That's singular. We're not talking plurals here. This is not the 10 fucking pints brigade going for a spin.
Someone drinking a can while driving, you'd be like, that's particularly irresponsible. Not necessarily so.
Because they've drunk less than the person who drank the can before they got in the car.
Precisely, Gavin. And this is all from the ad copy that White Hag sent me. So this is officially endorsed by them.
have one drink and drive. Would, like, in Ireland, in the year of our Lord 2024, probably lead to a bit more drink driving. If you were to do that in, say, America, where they haven't gone through the two will do process yet, and are still on the five will do.
Yeah, they're still on what was I supposed to do? I drove here.
Having spent a lot of time in rural Ireland in the last few weeks, I'm like, sure is a lot of cars parked outside this local pub.
Yeah, that's what the car park's for.
Yeah, it's for parking the cars in, sir. And the idea that the guards should in any way coordinate their checkpoints with the car parks in large rural pubs, I don't know where that idea comes from, but it needs to be gotten rid of right now. Can't they go back to pretending to do the tests like they used to do? I mean, it's probably fine. I think we should, I mean, sure, it'll save a few lives, but millions will be late if we
eliminated drinking. Simply unacceptable.
And I do have to take umbrage somewhat with the Heineken Zero ad with, I think Sebastian Vettel is the F1 guy, could be Max Verstappen. It's one of those non-Michael Schumacher, non-Damon Hill people.
It's Max. Non-Lewis Hamilton looking guy. Yeah,
the ones I haven't heard of, you know. you're right, it is Max Verstappen, Jack. And they're like, who's the best driver here? And the tagline is the one who hasn't been drinking.
I'm going to tell you, on 10 pints is better than me at driving.
Yeah,
yes, it's definitely 100%.
He has to be unconscious before it's not him.
I damaged my car by hitting a curve with Lionel Messi. Just like, who's better at football? The one who hasn't been drinking. It's like, It would have to be 20 pints before Lionel Messi is
There's probably
than
a
me.
Number of pints at which he's probably better at football against someone really shit because he's got outrageous, he's got just that little bit more confidence like it would be possibly needed. He's doing tricks on you and shit. Yeah.
I mean, he could be actively vomiting and shitting and he'd be better than me.
He'd be more difficult to tackle.
Certainly. Careful. You only have to do it once. And then, like, you get that sort of it buys you a half a second of hesitation, which at the highest level of football, it's all you need.
Yeah.
Like, he's not gonna...
And trust and believe, we would be playing the highest level of football should this scenario occur.
Honestly, I mean, I don't know why they don't let us occasionally.
Him just going off and having a cheeky bomb on the side of the pitch would imply that I'm left alone with the ball and may do as much damage as good.
Yeah. No, Jack, that's not your goal.
I put it in the square. Circle going square.
And we have learned that a cheeky vom at the side of the pitch is a bookable offence. We've learned that much. You also learned that I learned the number one rule of everything that day, which is we should have always known, which is that it doesn't matter if it's in the rule book. The referee has decided you're getting a yellow card.
He'll
figure out what it's for later on.
Yeah, this isn't like getting arrested. They actually don't have to tell you.
Oh, man, you haven't been arrested very often, have you? It's very like getting arrested. They'll figure it out later.
But I don't even think he has to figure it out later. I think he can just be like, no, I gave it to
you. Bringing the game into disrepute is the obstruction of an officer in continuation of his duties of football. It's like, we'll just say it and there's nothing you can't. Like obstruction of a guard in the carrying out of his duties is like bringing the game into disrepute. They're just going, there's no rule, but fuck you.
Fuck you.
But also, fuck you. Fuck you.
We're searching you under the Drugs Act. The what? I'm going to have to search you under the Drugs Act. Right. Okay. Can we just skip to the part where you bundle me off to the chokey for an afternoon, because you've decided you're doing something. Here, lads, we noticed a lot of, there've been reports from locals of suspicious looking youths matching your description who are casing houses. Okay, we'll just come with you then, because you're just gonna make up something.
Yeah.
My brother, a good friend of my brother's, is a lawyer now, and I think he was a law student at the time. But he once had some alcohol confiscated. It was a sealed bottle, and I'm sure he was being belligerent. But that is his God given right. He had some alcohol confiscated from him in a sealed bottle by a guard, and he immediately asked. He's like, "Which station is this going to be given to?" Great. Immediately went to that station to insist on getting his property back. Filed a formal complaint. They had the guard come in and he refused to leave until he got an apology.
Excellent.
They did always used to claim you could get your booze back if you showed up at the guard station, like within 2 weeks or whatever, you could have you. Because they actually had no, like they would just take it. They had no right to take it. They just would.
Yeah. And he went and got it back immediately and then went back out.
Good for him that happened. They would anytime we said that, they're like, it won't be at the station until next week.
And he just said, yeah, well then you can call them back in.
Yeah. Call them in, you can, right now. I mean, good for him, problem. But they also, it's the guards. They will. I mean, good for him that happened, but they usually just go, no.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No.
You're
correct. You're correct.
Counterpoint. No.
Okay, well, if you can wake a judge up at this time, and there should be a habeas corpus, but for cans, you're right. And the only reason nothing gets done about it is because by the time you're old enough to think of it, it becomes hilarious that young people get their drink taken off them, as opposed to the absolute buzzkill that it is when you're younger.
Yeah.
But you know, but good for, and so we have our own problems here, is what I'm saying. I was not a defund the police guy, but I am take the cans off the police. That's what I'm for.
That's healthy. That's a nice, you know, reasonable centrist position, Manus.
And you remember that troublemaker kid named Manus, or whatever his name was, in your school, who always insisted that the guards, like, they just take a hash so they can smoke it themselves. You know, they just take that so they can smoke it themselves. And like, you always were like, yeah, I'm sure they do that. Yeah, okay, absolutely. Then come to find out, oh yeah, they were just smoking it themselves.
Yeah.
Report after report of like the officer's stash getting just taken out of the evidence locker. And well, turns out Scumbag Johnny was correct. I wonder, should we also be looking for the packets of John Player Blue with the holes in the tinfoil? Because they may have hash in them. And maybe you can take a dump in a guard's hat if you're pregnant.
I think that's a British thing.
It's a nothing thing. It's like getting your glass of port at your exams in Trinity, but only if you have your sword.
It's a fun thing we made up and agreed not to ever try in case we find out it's not true.
Of course it's
I
not
think
true.
Most of Trinity lore is fun stuff we made up and agreed to never try.
Yeah. Very good point.
But it would be more funny if it was if we'd made it up. But most of it, it's just like we stole it from Oxford. It wasn't true when they made it up either, but we stole it. So it's ours too. You know, the provost, the last provost before there were women in Trinity was said there'd be women in there over his dead body. And so they buried him at front gate so that the women who came into Trinity would do so over his dead body.
Oh.
So is there any way that he's buried under there? I mean, no, he's not buried under there. So he said that. I mean, he didn't say that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, no one's buried under there. That's not a thing. And why would they do that to a former? Have you ever known them to be that disrespectful to a former provost? Like, fuck where you want to be buried.
Famously, the college became incredibly pro-woman the day he died, and they would do something like that.
I'd believe it now. If you were like, we dug him up, we're putting him under there. I'd be like, I believe they would do that now. Just to distract from whatever other nonsense they were up to. They'd be like, we're making up for it. We've put, you know, it's legal to shoot a Catholic from that window in the rubrics only on Christmas Day and only with a government issued crossbow. I mean, it is. That's not true, though. How about what a technical old college boiler? That's not. No, it doesn't. That's not. I can't go to the High Court and be like, technically an old college bylaw actually made it legal for me to shoot that Catholic out of that window with my crossbow and to have the judge do anything other than go, no.
But like, yeah, like I feel like part of what's wrong with all of those is that they're old timey. Like, we should be making them up as like, and did you know, since 2012, when fundraising for a player's show, it is necessary to...
You bake must sales. Contact the junior dean in advance.
Bake sales must include Protestant biscuits.
There was, I don't know if you know that, the controversy over Mikado's. As to whether they were Protestant biscuits or not, or whether they were Protestant cakes. And in fact, remember the fear of the junior dean you would have as a student, and then until you ever ran up against them, and then you realized that you also had in your arsenal the ability to whatever punishment they decided you were getting, to go, no!
I was on a stag just before Christmas with the new junior dean.
Oh, no way. Did you give him or her a good pantsing or a good wedging?
Unfortunately, it was the other way around. They, you know, in every situation, they have all the power.
It was someone who works in...
Yeah, it was someone who works in Trinity, and the junior dean had left, so they were like interim... junior dean, and apparently more than one junior dean, you only speak to the junior dean of punishments.
Yeah, you do, the dean of punishments, junior dean of punishments. There's like eight of them, I think, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, the dean of punishments,
like,
and they,
the junior dean. Yeah.
They wear the black leather and have the whip, and that's the other thing that's in the tunnels underneath the college alongside the wine.
Yeah.
Yeah. They can, that's got to be, junior dean of like in any way interacting with students has to be up there with the person in the Department of Social Protection who has to man the window at the Dole office. They're just like, oh, so I don't know if you guys know that, but it's like, that's the person you meet there did something to get to be put there. They piss someone off. No one wants to do. It's like window 12 or whatever. The one where it's just the public just walk up to it. That's no one wants it, and if you're the person there, pissed somebody off.
I only this afternoon got a public services card and registered for one. Gotta say, the fella, an absolute treat.
Yeah. You're probably the soundest person he's met this year.
Like, yeah, I have all my paperwork. I'm relatively well spoken, and I think you're doing a fine job.
I always heard about you. Go fuck yourself. Wait, what?
What's your grandmother's maiden name? Fuck you as well. Fuck Leo Varadkar. That's me fucking. That's the name.
Poxy Leo is the bane of almost every dough. Poxy Leo letting in all those immigrants to also get the dole. That's a tough one. how dare they get it too? Only a scumbag would get the, I mean, my point, I've lost sight of what my point is here. I guess I'm just going to have to get a job. Then I can be racist again.
Yeah, that was the only thing stopping them.
That seemed to be the main point of the sort of Irish Times letters to the editor people in the immediate aftermath of the Dublin riots, was that like, oh, and you know they're all on the dole. Like, okay, is your point that are you just trying to sneakily get it in that it's okay if you do this?
Yeah. If they weren't, would this be fine?
I go in. I work 9 to 4:30 most days during the week. So if I want to riot on the streets, my fucking taxes that are paying for those fucking streets.
They should have their dole cut. So that they're taking up the good rioting spots for most taxpayers.
It's the real, like, you listen to that, you hear that kid's song that's like, your daddy pays taxes, so that's your gun. Reach for a cop's gun. It's the reach for a cop's gun approach.
Pretty funny, actually.
It's really good. I'll send you the link. That's your gun. And it's a really cute animation.
I pay your salary. Listen, buddy, I don't think you do. I don't think you're a net contributor, to be honest.
Yeah.
At best, we're one nipple over on the government's tit. Like that, like, you don't pay my fucking salary, okay? You threatened to call Joe Duffy on me a minute ago. You definitely don't pay my salary.
Yeah.
You have time during the day.
Yeah, unfortunately, Joe Duffy does over-index for people who have time during the day to talk to Joe Duffy.
What we need is a good evening and weekend Duffy kind of show.
I'll tell you this. It's more effective a means of getting what you want than in any way complaining to me.
Yeah.
I'm on the phone. If it's the government department you're supposed to ring and I'm on the phone, you bring Joe. He might do something. I am not helping you. We tell you the calls are recorded, but they're not. So when I just hang up on you,
that goes nowhere.
You've no recourse. ring your local TD. Their emails go in the same trash box as your ones do. This is all a joke. Obviously, I don't answer the phone or emails, so. Wouldn't be likely to give any concern to anyone. We're drinking some beers here, folks.
Yeah.
On this beer podcast that you're all interested in watching. I'm having an imported lager, Estrella Galicia, the Spanish for beer. Although I think the Spanish for beer is beer, but regardless.
What's birra?
Yeah, that's a birra. You want a birra this and a birra that, you know?
How is it, Manto?
That's lager, cold and lagery. It's fine.
Cold and lagery, yeah. I went for something not necessarily exciting, but something a bit different. This is Whitefield Brewery, Ivy Hall, Bavarian style dark ale. Brewed in Tipperary. It is a dunkel. It's a dunkel. They give us some history on the dunkel in the back. And then I think they've got a tagline in Latin, which just makes me like them a little bit less. So, like, they've got a few taglines. These guys really love taglines. So on the back, they've got Cognito Ergo Sum, which I believe is, I think, therefore I am.
Cognito Ergo Sum would be, I'm hiding, therefore I am.
That's incognito.
Or I'm disguising myself, therefore I am.
Um,
Yeah, it would. It would be. Yeah.
And then their other one is Plow to Pour, as I believe they are a farm as well. And as a dark lager goes, pretty good. Like,
oh man.
Yeah, I mean, like, I like lagers that aren't necessarily pilsners. So, like, your Viennas, your Dunkels, your is a Bock a lager?
A Bock is a lager. Yeah. And would you write like it would those, be a little darker? It would be and stronger.
Like those sort of more dark, kind of malty, like, you know, kind of, yeah, kind of more interesting ones. And I think that they get totally lost because if you put lager on the bottle, you're going to expect a Heineken, a Budweiser, a Estrella Galicia. Power to the people who are making the lesser known lagers, I say.
You're right. We may, it's one of those terms that's like, it's actually very broad. It's if someone says they'd like a lager, it should mean nothing to you.
Yeah.
But it does tend to mean I want a Budweiser or whatever.
Mm.
What do you call it? Can I just clarify? So that's, you said it was a Dunkel. Is it a, it's a dark lager rather than say like a Dunkel Weiss or something like that.
Yes. It's a dark lager.
Yeah, which, yeah, because you did, to the extent that you'll find a Dunkel in this country usually is just a brown wheat beer. This is, yeah.
Yeah,
so just, say, but it's one of those things that they're kind of like the brown ale, where it's like, it's not that it's inherently a style that's nice, but there's something about that. There's so few breweries that do
the self-selecting quality.
Yeah. You find dark miles are kind of
like wearing weightlifting shoes. Wearing weightlifting shoes doesn't make you stronger, but if you have weightlifting shoes, you're probably pretty fucking strong.
You probably there's a weird I don't know about it whether it's also universally true of all sports, so it may not be true of weightlifting. There's a point at which if I'm involved in a running race or whatever, which is the technical term, most runners call them running races because, you know, a race could be anything.
There's many kinds of race.
There's a running race, or you can look around
to just a race. They didn't say it was a running race. Turned out it was fucking wacky races. People were there riding fucking logs on flying machines. There was a grinning dog.
I didn't win. I was too busy trying to catch this fucking pigeon. Didn't realize it was a finish line.
Sabotaged by the complexity of these mechanisms and nothing else.
Oh.
Yeah, it's tough.
So come on, you turned up to a running race.
And you look around and you can sort of tell like how good people are likely to be, how fast people are likely to be based on what they're wearing. So like you see the guy who's just wearing clearly like his rugby training gear from the last time he exercised 4 years ago, and you're like, okay, he's one guy. And like you see a guy in his like running club singlet, and you know, is reasonably good runners, and you're like, okay, that's another guy. And then you see a guy who's like just, he's gone too far. He's wearing like compression garments all over, the compression socks, the compression sleeves. I have no idea what they're supposed to do. The compression socks don't work, but I at least know what they're supposed to do. Like, you know, the fucking, these like sunglasses with things hanging off them. A lot of gear. And you're like, this guy's really shit. Because you know, he's going to be, he's spent like fucking 300 quid on the Vaporfly fucking, you know, they actually had 3%, take 3% off your marathon time. Buddy, this is a parkrun 5K. They ain't taking off nothing.
Yeah. What's 3% of 6 hours?
Yeah. And actually, you know, two interesting things about this guy. You know, one thing, he's not very good. And another, it annoys him that he's not, because he spent a lot of money on this. And you can actually fuck with this guy a little bit, because you can, like, he wants to win. So if you just run slightly faster than him for the entire race and keep going slightly, he'll be sick, because he'll keep catching up to you. And you just go a little faster, you can make him sick. But then you've got, there's an equal and opposite other end of the scale to the, you know, so you get past the guy who's wearing his like old rugby gear, and then you get to this guy who's wearing like knockoff Converse shorts and like a mesh vest, and it's like, okay, this guy's a fucking, he's
either lost or this is one of those psychos who just doesn't give a shit and he'll run 100 miles dressed like that.
I don't, and I don't know which is scarier.
Yeah,
they're both pretty scary. So that may be true in the weightlifting community as well.
Yeah, just the guy under his breath, he's like, who's going to carry the boats? It's me. I'm going
to carry the boats. Is that one of Jocko Willink's ones or is that another?
No, it's your man, David Goggins.
Oh, David Goggins, sorry.
I looked for the, I was like, who's going to carry the boats? Who's going to carry the boats? I looked for the origin of that and it was just like something he started to say. It doesn't fucking mean anything.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it doesn't mean much. Yeah.
Yeah, and yet you would run a mile from the guy who was going, well, it's come my own arse. I gotta come in my own arse.
They're all words. Like yeah. The truth, like let's see what's similar and what's different about these two phrases. Both of them contain words that don't really mean a lot.
Strong overlap. Yeah. And the differences column remains empty.
One of them could be construed, if you were at a stretch, as weirdly sexual.
Yeah.
And the other is, I'd like to come in my own arse.
It's true. And it's yeah. And you'd be like, oh, I carry the boats guy and come in my own arse guy. They're the same. No, we're not. I disavow carry the boats guy. I like to come in my own arse. It's a fun thing to say. That if you say it enough times, it's funny. It's funny eventually.
It has an extended version of the Family Guy joke thing where it's like, it's initially it's like, oh, funny because it's weird, and then it's like really not funny because it's weird. And then you say it so much it becomes funny again. But it does have this secondary drop-off
that
people don't think about, which is like, I think this represents something within the sayer that I'm not comfortable with.
Yeah, yeah. And then you think even more about it and realize that that's not true. And then, you know, there's that third bit that you've left out, but you did mean to say, which is that it actually...
I actually think...
I'm actually weird about it. There's a fourth bit where you realize second bit was actually right.
Yeah, that's true. The fourth bit, famous. Famous.
I really did think that the third bit was an asymptote of like, this is nothing to do with his arse, but it's something to do with something.
Fourth bit is famous for actually coming right before the fifth bit, where you actually remember, in fact, that it was the guy is not only hilarious, but it's really actually very clever. It's clever as well. It's not just not weird. It's actively clever.
Actively clever.
And then what's famous about that fifth bit is it's the last bit.
That's what everyone says. The fifth bit's the last.
It's the last, and that's why you have to find me
for every time someone has told me that the fifth bit was the last bit. And I'd have at this point, based on this conversation, two or three nickels.
You can find me squatting significantly less than my own body weight in the gym, going like, oh, fuck it, fifth bit's the last bit. Fifth bit's the last bit. Fifth bit's the last bit. And then if someone asks me about that, I go, funny you should ask. Funny, because it's not weird when I explain it, that it actually comes from the
I like to come in my own arse.
Yeah, the other well-known phrase, I like to come in my own arse. And they'd be like, oh, thank God, I thought he was a who's going to carry the boats guy. Oh, thank goodness.
That carry the boats thing has resulted in one of my favorite modern sort of latter era UFC bits of trash talk, which is your man Paddy the Baddie saying after knocking someone out who trains with Devin, I was like, who's gonna carry the boats? Who's gonna carry the boats? Not you, you fucking idiot. You got knocked out.
That's fucking good.
It's very good.
Not Paddy the Baddie Pimblett carrying the torch still for, there's not very many of them anymore, but the people of the Ricky Hatton, I get enormously fat between fights school.
I love it. I absolutely fucking love it. Like, finish a heavyweight fight, world champion, straight down the fucking chippy.
Dead.
Let's not forget, you are fundamentally in the entertainment business.
Yeah.
And that's entertaining.
It's just the complete inability to care one bit about your physique or health if you're not actively training for a fight. It's the best.
It's so good.
Tyson Fury. No, it's not as obvious with Tyson because he's a heavyweight, because the other guys had to cut weight. So it was like Ricky Hatton would go from Tyson Fury just goes from being, he's a bit fat to being enormously fat. The difference isn't as stark. Whereas Ricky Hatton would go from shredded to just the fattest man on earth within 4 months.
And as we've optimized, and sports nutrition has gotten so advanced, no one is asking, what have we lost? We've lost a lot.
Yeah.
It's kind of the fucked up thing about weight classes as well. It's like, man, can't we just figure out that guy is he's 185 pounds now, but he could still fight at his 145 pound weight because that's all fat. You should be allowed to put on as much fat as you want.
They should dip them in one of those machines. Yeah, figure out, this guy's fat as fuck. He could be he's going up against a 5-year-old.
Yeah, as long as you've not put on any muscle, it shouldn't count.
No, it's got to, I think it's more like a weighted average because fat is armor.
Mmm.
So yeah. it's like it can't, maybe it counts less, but it's still something. Yeah.
Jack, I agree entirely. Yes.
Yeah, let's make this stupid thing more complicated.
Yeah.
Let's toner the shit out of this.
That is armor. So I should be wearing my Under Armour gear beneath my skin.
Yes.
Under my armor.
Under your armor.
Yeah, it's not called over skin, is it?
No.
Yeah, they'd make it pretty obvious. You know, these guys work in marketing. They want to really guide the customer to what they should be doing. And they didn't call it overskin.
They didn't call it overskin.
And as well,
they didn't.
Who's to say, where is it in the rule book in combat sports that you can't wear a little bit of chainmail?
Right there, Manus. Rule one.
Weird, yeah, funny that it even had to be written down. You would have thought they wouldn't have thought of to write that down, but they actually did think to put in specifically you can't wear a chainmail. You can wear you're allowed to wear greaves though.
Yes, you are. Yeah,
greaves. And not what of gauntlets?
Gauntlets. You may throw one down, both metaphorically and in fact. But gauntlets, no, they have actually specific rules about what you can wear in your hands. I feel like gorget might be useful in UFC. People seem to lose those fights a lot by being choked. So I think if you had some sort of...
What's a gorget?
I think it's, assuming I'm correct, which is a big assumption, it's like armor for around your neck. It's like a neck thing.
Oh, I did not know that.
That would really rule out a lot of the ways that people can beat you in a fight by choking.
Yeah, and it would introduce a new one, which is grabbing you by it and just dragging you about the place.
Yeah, horse collar.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've looked up gorget, and let me tell you, Manus, if you want to spend a lot of time on it on Etsy and a lot of money ahead of your next LARPing event, you can get some pretty fucking elaborate gorgets.
Man, LARPers are the coolest, aren't they?
They really fucking aren't.
I was sort of expecting one of those hidden nuclear bombs to go off because I was fairly sure that was going to be one of those codes that they're like, we have to make the code something no one would ever say. So if we've the code is LARPers are the coolest.
That's very good.
The toughest guys in real life are the people who practice HEMA. That's another bomb shutter offer. Historical European martial arts.
What are historical European martial arts?
These are the guys. These are LARPers, but with extra steps. These are the LARPers who buy all the chainmail and stuff and their swords, and they fight each other in chainmail and swords and call it a sport.
So fencing,
really fight each other.
No, fencing. We'd be disrespecting fencing massively. I'm sure I'm disrespecting HEMA too. I mean, the people who do it will tell you that I am. But the weirdest guy loves HEMA.
So wait, is LARPing is role play, so they're not actually fighting. It's all but is HEMA LARPing, but they're kind of going at each other?
It's still LARPing, but they've convinced themselves that it's real. Yeah, they're going.
Oh my gosh.
There's a club in Dublin 8.
Of course there is.
Obviously, Dublin 8's full of fucking weirdos. Yeah.
It's literally around the back of Guinness. It's right there.
Yeah, the coolest guy does it. I bet you. The guy who wears
chainmail. Let me call Howard Helen and see if he
did. Founded by Neil Fitzpatrick.
What? Yeah, it seems like they're using swords, fencing masks, and a lot of like padding armor. So it seems like, yes, it is just sword fighting.
It's fencing without the discipline.
Like, yeah, it's fencing where you're like, well, I'm gonna get hit. You know, we're gonna get hit by some fucking swords.
Yeah. They're... At least fencing is fucking honest. Yeah. Like fencing is like, I'm gonna put all these pads on, but the first one to get hit fucking dies.
You got stabbed by a sword.
You got stabbed by a fucking sword, like he's dead.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter, you got him like a second later, you're dead.
You're dead. He won.
I now realize that I probably did a really embarrassing thing a couple of months ago, where we were doing a wrestling show at Comic-Con and we were sharing the dressing room with two guys who I referred to their face as LARPers. And on reflection, their gear was much too nice and they were almost certainly HEMA people who were like, another ignorant loser who doesn't know HEMA.
Yeah, you're the loser. Yeah, I agree with you, Jack. Yeah, in that situation. What a loser you must have seemed to those two sex havers. This is your friend who can't enjoy anything where the sword fighting isn't historically accurate, does HEMA. Like,
oh, Jesus Christ.
Your mate who fucking will stop everything in the middle of a talk about Lord of the Rings and go, it's actually a trebuchet. It's not a catapult. That's actually a mangonel. The difference is subtle but distinct. The mangonel, you see...
It's counterweight,
him.
Not tension.
Yeah,
this is like, dude, you're a counterweight, not tension.
You're a counterweight to any fun happening.
People around you feel tension in social situations. You're a counterweight. But it is so important true. To be right. It is important.
Yeah. Correctness is the most important thing.
If the choice is between being right and being wrong. Damn it, folks. I think I see a couple of lawbreakers in here.
The law says this is a trebuchet.
What's the brew news? Fucking tell me.
Oh, I told you it. It was the 440
mil cans. Oh, sorry. I thought there was multiple brew newses.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. For the 415th week in a row, we're the best.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
We're fucking class. It's actually the listeners who are wrong. That's another brew news. No, there isn't really any other brew news. I'm embarking on an experimental dry May.
Oh. Ooh.
Michelle is doing like a step challenge of some sort and has decided she's doing a dry May. In effort, it would seem a little cruel for me to be watching Murder, She Wrote on the couch in the evenings while drinking, while she doesn't get to. It'd be unfortunate for me to do the only thing that makes enjoying Murder, She Wrote possible when she's not allowed to do it. We're both going to do a dry May.
That's cool. Can I just circle back real quick on one thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, she did write it. I have to say, it became a lot more watchable for me. Michelle loves Murder, She Wrote. We have the DVDs.
Yeah, Michelle looks great for a woman in her 70s.
Yeah, she is the oldest 35-year-old you ever met. She loves Murder, She Wrote. If there's murders of any sort, of any description, someone she'll watch it. Yeah. Murder, She Wrote becomes a lot more watchable when you realize Jessica Fletcher is killing them herself.
Yeah.
Then it makes it actually makes sense, and there's sort of a tension like, will she get caught this time?
It would have been an amazing finale
because like, there's no reason, like, oh, yeah, it, they just didn't have the balls.
I finally found a use for deep faking.
Yeah,
you're gonna make deep fake porn of Angela Lansbury? I knew you would.
Too late, Jack.
It's already lots of it. Because, like, unlike many of the other ones, which improbable though they are, the person at least has a job where it's sort of, or like, yeah, I know The Mentalist is nonsense, but he does at least work with the California Bureau of Investigation.
there would be a lot of murders around him, you know.
Yeah. If it was small town mind reader solves repeated and similar crimes.
It's like Castle. Sure, the idea of a mystery writer who is somehow becomes a police. I can't really remember how Castle.
He's written so good detective. He became good detective.
But at least it's set in New York. Murder, She Wrote is set in the small fictional New England fishing village of Cabot Cove. There's from all available evidence about 50 people living there, and there's a murder a week.
Manus, did you just try to explain how Castle is realistic by the same logic that Police Chief Wiggum does? Is like a lot of murders in New York.
Yeah,
wasn't there an unsolved murder in New York the other day? There's a lot of unsolved murders in New York. You just don't know when to shut up.
Is Steve Sachs doing 100 years in prison for all every murder in New York, every unsolved murder in New York City? Well, once you realize she's killing them herself, it's like, oh yeah. I mean, it doesn't quite explain certain elements of it, like why anyone's watching, but it does explain. Well, you know, of course, you certainly could plead innocence, or I could kill you myself, and then, well, you know, I'll certainly get away with it because I'm friends with the sheriff, and the sheriff is your friend. Yeah, and then and it explains further why in later seasons many of the episodes aren't in Cabot Cove. Like, she goes to visit various relatives and murders take place there. It's like, yeah, they're catching on to her there. She can't be fucking back in the fishing village.
When is this set? Is it in like the 70s or 80s or something?
It's contemporary to the time it's set. So it's like mid to late 80s. And it goes on until like 1995. But it's very much the early 90s is the 80s. You begin to like the thing.
Yeah,
we
and
remember
the 90s
the
runs
90s.
Until about 2005.
Yeah, the thing we remember as the 90s was the late 90s with like extreme things and
bands, boy band. Like NSYNC did their finest work in like 2001. You know,
yeah, taking things all the way to the max as opposed to just half maxing them. You know, that's a 2001 thing, really, as much as anything. Limp Bizkit released Chocolate Starfish in their hot dog flavored water in 2002, I think, and that's the most 90s album that there's ever been.
Yeah.
I don't think you understand. He said fuck so many times that if he had said fuck two more times, there would have been 46 fucks in that. This is a song that has so many fucks in it. He just says it over and over again, and you would think it would lose impact after a while, but it really doesn't.
It gains it. It's a momentum thing, not a diminishing marginal returns thing.
And I have to tell you, the first time that I heard that, the twist at the end of that song was mind blowing to me, because I was like, "Fuck! I wish he'd said fuck two more times, because then there would have been 46 fucks."
If you listen real close, when he says 46.
There'd been 46 at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, brave of him to think Limp Bizkit fans could count. But
well, no, that's why he tells them. He only needs them to count to two.
then just lie, Fred. Then just lie. but it was, and he changed. What was good as well was that it was, it wasn't a cover of a Nine Inch Nails song, but it sort of was. He was
there was a lot of bands that were covers of Nine Inch Nails songs.
Yeah.
Did anyone ever actually count the fucks and make sure that his math was right?
He's from Jacksonville. Someone should have.
Yeah, that's true.
but I didn't. I have to admit, I just took his word for it. I counted them after he said, if I say fuck two more times. I did count those, and there was two more.
Yeah. See, he got to 15, stopped, yelled, "Go Jags, Duval!" and then maybe he lost count. No one's sure.
Yeah. And to be fair to Limp Bizkit, they get a lot of disrespect that they deserve.
Yeah. I mean, listen,
you know
they deserve it.
But you know what's important in these difficult and trying times? You just got to keep rolling.
There's my friend Ronan Hanlon from work is getting quite sick of every time he walks in the door, keep rolling, 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 keep rolling, 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 rolling.
I can't imagine why.
I think he's just no fun. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, like, it must be it.
Yeah, it's just not. I think he's just not. He probably doesn't understand what the joke is. It's probably what it is. If I say Ronan two more times, that's 46. Yeah. There was potentially other things to talk about, but they've gone by the wayside. They have. I do want to talk next week about the scourge of these modified e-bikes that every Deliveroo driver has now, and many just normal people have.
Well, there's a man deep into his 30s.
I mean, yeah, I want to talk about this scourge that it is.
Okay, I'll keep an eye out over the week, and I'll try and work up an anger.
You'll only have to run into one or two of them, like doing 50k on the footpath, before you'll be like, "What the fuck are you doing, sir?"
Okay, I'll keep an eye out.
And just remember that if it was a moped, at least it would make a warning noise.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the gentle whir doesn't really get you there. Yeah, that's okay. No, okay, you're planting seeds.
Yeah. And we can find a way to repurpose the old moped joke, which is what's the difference between a moped and a vacuum cleaner? And the moped, the dirt bag, is on the outside.
Very good.
That's a fucking good one.
That's such a
tight Sorry. Idea. It's very good.
So efficient.
So we've mentioned it, so we'll definitely come back to it next week. The scourge, absolutely. The middle-aged scourge.
That is a Manus Cronin guarantee.
Yeah. Oh, if I say guarantee.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, before we get to the inevitable review of Gav's beer, one other thing, friend of the show, wrestler Valkyrie, got called up to the big leagues, and she's on.
Oh, I did see that.
Raw,
yeah.
Last night.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
to Aoife Valkyria. Oh, I can't. Yes. Her old name was much more easier to deal with, and then they gave her like a very similar but subtly more difficult name to say.
Yeah, it's Lyra Valkyria now, I think.
She was Aoife Valkyrie, which was fine. Yeah, I was like, I got
that's
that straight.
It's fine when the name Aoife is pronounceable, and it's like, welcome to Florida.
Yeah, I understand why they had to change it. I mean, you know, yeah, congratulations. We had speculated on our WrestleMania episode that this was likely in the pipeline.
Yeah.
We didn't know it was, but we had speculated it was likely to be coming sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And it's a happy time for the whole Valkyria family. They did all change her name in solidarity, much like the Ultimate Warrior's family had to do. When he was like, Vince says I can't be Ultimate Warrior anymore. I'm changing my name to Ultimate Warrior. And the family were like, that's good for you. And then he said, so are you. And they went, that's good for you.
My name is now Dave Warrior.
Dave Warrior. Little Stephen Warrior. Yeah. So congratulations. And yes, we really don't need to review Estrella Galicia, because if you've ever been on holidays, you've had it.
You know, it's a 10.
Yeah. And... Oh, and we'll talk about the snooker next week, because I'm sure that'll still be relevant. That doesn't end real quickly, does it? I mean, that doesn't end real.
No, not at all.
No.
Like, says a man who has absolutely no idea of the calendar of snooker events.
Yeah. Yeah, like, we're just leaning into a joke, Manus. I have no idea what's
Sorry,
going on.
Is it Crucible time?
It is Crucible time, and I will mention simply one thing, which is that Stephen Hendry was on commentary today for the Ronnie O'Sullivan, Stuart Bingham opening session. And I think he said this line that I think we were all supposed to know, but I think only I did, where he goes, you know, and someone asked him, Stephen, and at this stage, you know, what's the main thing for Stuart Bingham? And he goes, well, you know, Stuart has to just put everything else out of his mind, you know. It's just him and the table.
Oh!
And he did.
He did a little pause, like anyone was gonna fucking know what he was talking about.
No, you know that whoever he was on with,
you
know that whoever he was on with stopped, turned, looked at him. They both smiled, shook their heads, and went, And then like pressed the cough button on the mic and said, "You can't," and then got back into commentary.
They said that's one for the connoisseur, Stephen. That's what they said. But only the legends will get that one. And only the legends did. But yes, we'll come back to all of that after Ronnie O'Sullivan has won his eighth snooker title, or he hasn't. Those are the two things that could have happened by the time we're next speaking. Gavin, have we a final review of your white bipsy?
Ivy Hall, Whitefield Ivy Hall. Brewery. It's fine. Now, you know the way the taste and smell are very closely linked. I am in a room that is freshly painted, or there's paint on some sections of it. So now I know how the Queen feels. You know, every room she walks into is fresh paint. I feel like the beer was nice at the start and it's mellowed to its detriment. However, I don't want to like say that that's, you know, how it is. That might be the environment that I'm in. I think this is a nice beer. It's a dark lager, which you don't see a lot of. I think it is malty and delicious and rich. And I give it an 8.
Okay.
And I try another dark lager. You know, I don't know, like, because they're so rare, it's hard to tell if it's a good version of the style, but it's a nice beer and it's an unusual style.
And a pro tip, try and keep the paint fumes out of your nostrils. While you're drinking it, you might enjoy it even more.
Exactly.
That's perfectly fine.
And is there any smells do you think it would pair nicely with, if we wanted to go the other way with this?
Yeah, it would probably pair well with like a color trend, like elephant's breath. If you could like color match that.
I'll swing by Farrell and Ball and see what they have. Excellent. I was drinking Heineken as well. I have nothing to review.
Yeah, and if you've ever been on holiday, you'll know it's a 5. And really only leaves us one thing to cheers to, and that's to just clearing your mind of all distractions. Just you and the table.
You and the table.
You and, of course, the table.
That's me and the table.
That's me. I think I gave me and the table to a charity shop, which I'm quite sad about. Like, that I wish I could go back to those top 5.
Haven't they been through enough?
Very uncharitable donation that you made there, Gavin.
Goddamn spiteful.
Good enough. Splice in some reaction shots of me and shove it on the air.